And if council are here, ready for the next matter, you can start making your way up.
I take this is where I find my new neighbor?
Yes. Indeed. Welcome. It's nice to see council live. This is the third of three matters that we're considering for oral argument this morning. As you set up, I'll just make a couple of preliminary comments. You do have the souvenir covers for the microphone in front of you by the water, so when you get a chance, if you want to cover the microphone, it looks like a ketchup container. Yes, except it's got the covers. The other issue that's a little bit unique by our additional podiums that we put in is that you don't have the time clock directly in front of you, so you'll have to kind of look to your left and right, depending who's speaking, because you have the clock on the traditional larger microphone. But otherwise, our process will be the same, except instead of looking at you through a computer, we get to look at you live, which is appreciated. So I'll note for the record this matter, file number A21-1182, Brando Properties, LLC, appellant versus Catherine M. Melander et al. As respondents. And so, counsel for appellant, if you are ready, or when you're ready, if you would identify yourself for the record, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Keith Johnson, and I'm representing the appellant, Brandel Properties, in this appeal. Brandel Properties is requesting that this court reverse the summary judgment determination made by the district court in this case and find that Melander's negligence was a but-for cause of damage to plaintiffs. Indeed, plaintiffs are requesting that the court not only do that, but we're requesting that the court also grant plaintiffs' motion for summary judgment, finding that Attorney Melander was negligent and that her negligence was the proximate cause and but-for cause of damages to plaintiffs. So it's a motion for partial summary judgment, not addressing the issue of damages.
Counsel, can I inquire on that? As you procedurally, it seems like we could not grant the relief you're requesting because, if I understand correctly, the judge ruled solely in respondent's favor on the but-for element. And so, in other words, the court didn't address the negligence issue and or the other damages-related issue. So I assume by that we couldn't grant the full relief you just summarized and have in your brief, but instead, if we agreed with your counsel's argument with regard to the but-for, it would be remanded for further proceedings.
That could be fair, Your Honor. I wish I had the authority in front of me to state this, but I think the court has discretion to do what it wants to do based on what is before it.
Did you file a notice of related appeal?
No, I did not, Your Honor. So if that's the case, then we would just deal with the motion for summary judgment and not plaintiff's motion. Plaintiff's claim for damages is that but for Ms. Melander's negligence, Brandel Properties wouldn't have entered into the lease and incurred the landlord improvements that it paid. There are basically two ways to prove but-for causation in this case. And this goes down to the better deal and the no deal scenario. The attorney negligence as a historical event is supposed to be compared to the hypothetical alternatives of what would have happened in the case. And the hypothetical alternatives are determined by looking at the better deal scenario, what the client would have done, or the no deal scenario.
Wait a minute. I'm going to interrupt you there just for 1 minute, because the case law is very clear that your client has to show that he would have gotten, or the company would have gotten, a more favorable result but for the alleged malpractice. So let's stick with that terminology. So what evidence did your client put in at the summary judgment stage to show that what your client is saying, that your client would not have entered into this lease, was in fact a more favorable result?
Well, Your Honor, basically, when you look at this better deal scenario and the no deal scenario,
I'm going to ask you to stick with the language, the actual standard, which is more favorable result. So you can talk about my client would not have entered into this lease, and that would have been more favorable because, and I'm looking for the because.
Very well. What the court did in this case, what the district court did in this case, is they applied the better deal scenario to the situation. And we don't have any problem with that. We agree with the district court's determination that the other party would not have entered into this transaction if they had, if they were aware that they would have been obligated to make the tenant reimbursement for the landlord improvements. That was a proper decision by the court because it applied the better deal scenario. In this case, the district court did not, though, analyze the no deal scenario. The no deal scenario basically says that the plaintiff must prove he would have obtained a more favorable result by foregoing the transaction.
That's exactly what I'm trying to get at. What is the evidence that your client submitted to demonstrate that the result would have been more favorable?
He basically testified consistently, Your Honor, that he was expecting to get tenant reimbursement for the landlord improvements he made. That was fully his intent. That was fully his expectation. And based on that expectation, Your Honor, we feel that the no-deal scenario would apply to this case. He would not have entered this lease had he known that the tenant would not have to make the pro rata reimbursement for the landlord improvements he made. The evidence shows that Melander's negligence was the but-for cause, because it obligated Brandow to pay all of the landlord improvements without getting any type of tenant reimbursement, which he fully intended and expected. Now, his claim is for all of the landlord improvements that he made, because he wouldn't have made those landlord improvements had he known that the tenant in this case would not make any reimbursement for the landlord improvements he made, which he expected under the contract. Now, the respondents are asserting that we've got to basically factor in the fair market value of the building in this case and basically compare that or set that off against his claim for damages for the total landlord improvements of over $1,300,000. Well, they've cited no legal authority for this. There's no legal authority saying that Brandow's claim for improvements should be set off by the fair market value of the building.
But counsel, wouldn't that, how else do you calculate one's harm? The better deal versus how else would one do that than to calculate the value of the property that's been improved, which we'll assume intuitively has improved because the it's undisputed your client made the improvements.
There's the assumption, I mean, there's kind of this equitable assumption that what about the fair market value? And that's what's being done here. But the general purpose of damages is to compensate for a loss. And I think this is the important point. The measure given by the measure, this measure to compensate him for the loss, to compensate, I should say, Brandow properties for the loss. You've got to look, basically, it gives Brando the benefit of the bargain by putting him in the same position as if the lease had been performed as Brando expected and intended. He's entitled to basically be paid for his expectation interest in this lease if it had been performed as he expected and intended.
But aren't you then going back to the better deal versus the no deal, and you've conceded that because the evidence, the judge got it correct, that the better deal scenario doesn't fit, so the only deal would be the no deal, and doesn't that lead us back to the damages issue? There has to be a damage, ultimately, to know whether the no deal, you know, sometimes we're in situations whereby our choice to do something or not to do something ends up being the wrong choice because I benefited from what happened. So the point being is if, for example, if the evidence was to show that the value actually was greater than the cost of improvements, then he would have benefited from the no deal. Isn't that the sort of analysis? Now, I don't know that we can do that so much as a district court, but isn't that a relevant factor ultimately in whether a malpractice caused the damage, no deal damage?
Your Honor, the better deal scenario doesn't apply here. It can't apply here simply because...
But wait a minute. Your client, you just said that the tenant would not have entered into this lease if it had remained as your client intended.
Correct.
Your client said the way it was, your client would not have entered into it. And so what we're dealing with is a no-deal scenario. So what evidence is there that no lease, your client, the result would be more favorable to your client? Because there is no set of circumstances, as you said yourself here, where that lease would have happened as your client expected it to.
Correct.
Okay, so then how is the no-deal scenario, now using your terminology, a more favorable result? Because that restaurant would not have signed that lease. So there is no world where if the lease had remained as it initially was drafted, that your client would have had a tenant in there paying 82% of the landlord improvements on that Exhibit D, correct? I mean, that measure of damages, that ain't here, as you've said yourself, excuse my language. So how is the no-deal scenario more favorable to your client based on evidence that is in the record and submitted to the district court?
Your Honor, if Brando Properties had walked away from this deal, the no-deal scenario, it would have made none of the landlord improvements, not one of them, none of them. Under the no-deal scenario, Brando Properties wouldn't have made any of the landlord improvements, totaling over $1 million. That is his damages, the landlord improvements. Now,
your argument is that your client would have been better off than not this tenant, I guess, and no improvements to the building. That's the more favorable result.
It's the more favorable result. It also establishes the but-for causation in this case, Your Honor. That's basically what it does. I mean, Brando exercised reasonable care. He fully expected that Melander would do what was appropriate and in the interest of Brando Properties in this case. And there was no reason for him to expect that Melander was negligent on this thing. So based upon legal contractual principles, he's entitled to recover the landlord improvements. And there's no basis to set off the fair market value of the building. The fair market value of the building is relevant in issues like claims regarding the value of the building. Doesn't apply here. Marital dissolution, partition actions, insurance policies regarding the value of the building, the fair market value of the building. None of those issues are here. There's no issues like that that apply as a contractual issue to this case. So basically, Brandau is entitled to the full payment of the landlord improvements. And we largely rely, we've talked about the fact that this isn't a windfall.
But that issue is not really before us now, is it? What the measure of damages would be. It's just whether or not your client has put forward evidence of but-for causation, correct? I mean, that's an issue if we were to rule in your favor on appeal, that would be decided at a later date,
right.
Correct?
That's correct. Okay, yes. But basically, we're simply asserting there's no collateral statute doesn't apply here. I mean, we're just basically supporting the argument that the full value of the landlord improvements are the appropriate damages in this case. There's no law or regulation that says that it's a windfall. It's not a windfall. He did this because he was expecting a result, and he didn't get it.
Counsel, you'll have to conclude your comments here in 1 second, but I'll leave you a few moments if you want to make a
comment. I am done. My time is up, so I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Counsel, for respondent, you may approach the podium and identify yourself when you're ready. You may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Chris Angel, and it's my honor and privilege to be here today on behalf of Catherine M. Melander and her law firm, the respondents in this case. I'm impressed, as always, because I live with this case for a long time, and it's got lots and lots of documents. I'm impressed, and I can tell by the questions from the court that the court is familiar with the facts of the case, so I will...
Flattery will
brief.
Get you nowhere.
Never does.
Still nice to hear, of course.
we all know what the issue is, but before I address that issue, I think it is at least worth some mention as to how, why, and when we got to the point where that was the issue. Okay, when this lawsuit was started in October of 2019, the complaint in this case asserted only a better deal scenario claim. The claim was that Campagno had agreed.
After telling us how prepared we were, I think that's in your briefs, and I don't think it's relevant on this appeal.
Fair enough. The reason I simply raise that is with respect to timing, the amended complaint asserting the no deal claim wasn't even raised until after the plaintiff's expert disclosures. That's the only point that I want to make about that.
Mr. Angel, can I ask you, though, I did ask my first question to counsel for appellant was the relief they were requesting, and I suggested that it was we couldn't go that far because, as I understand it, the judge made the ruling solely on your client's motion and solely on the but-for. And do you agree with that? So, in other words, even if we agree with counsel as to the court's analysis there, it would have to be remanded for further proceedings. Because the judge limited the ruling.
I do, and I focused obviously on the part of the order granting our motion for summary judgment, but I do recall that the gist of our opposition to the plaintiff's motion was it needed to be denied for the very same reason that our motion needed to be granted. Well, there wasn't a notice of related appeal, as Judge Segal noted. I've had plenty of motions for summary judgment in my time that were denied. Wish I could appeal right away. You can't, except for certain circumstances. I don't know if there's some exception that would allow that here, but I don't believe it was done. So I would agree that to the extent that you were inclined to reverse the decision, it would be a remand of the district court just on that issue, and then they would have to decide it.
Thank you.
Look, the no-deal scenario, the problem with the no-deal scenario claim is this. As Mr. Johnson mentioned when he was at the podium, what the plaintiff seeks under the no-deal scenario is every single dollar that Brando spent to improve this building. That's what he's looking for.
Okay, but as I told Mr. Johnson, that's not in front of us. So setting aside what the actual measure of damages is, how has Brando failed to create a genuine issue of material fact that Brando would have been better off with no lease?
Fair enough, and I'll cut to the point. The point is, the reason why is for the reason that you pointed out during your questioning of Mr. Johnson. Brando presented absolutely zero evidence that it would have been better off under the no-deal scenario claim than it is now. Okay? It spent the money on its building. It has a resulting increase in fair market value of the building. And that's not all. Okay? You've also got the increased rental value of the building. You've also
Where is that in the record about rental value and fair market value? Because I didn't see it, and I may have missed it.
Yeah, well, there wasn't any. There wasn't it.
Let's set those arguments aside.
All right, well, then I'll make it real basic.
Because it has to be evidence in the record.
That's
and,
right.
And as I read the record presented to the district court, Mr. Brando did testify that some of the improvements, like the elevator, et cetera, weren't necessary. He had a restaurant in there before. He wasn't going to put it in. And now he's got a building with an elevator that may or may not increase the fair market value. He also testified that there were a few other, in his deposition, that there were a few other potential tenants who were interested in this. And it was, in fact, he signed a lease, Brando, the company, signed a lease with Lord Fletcher's. And they continued to pay rent, and they decided not to do it. And then the restaurant comes along, and there were a few other people. So isn't that, why is that not enough evidence to create a genuine issue of material fact?
How is that evidence of damages? The fact that now
we're not talking about damages. We're talking about causation.
I don't think we are. I think that's where our disagreement is. And I disagree with Mr. Johnson, and if anybody else on the court thinks that's what we're talking about, under the no-deal scenario
that
claim,
that is what
I disagree.
The district court... Wait, let's back up a minute. So the district court thought it was talking about but-for causation.
It did.
Which I know gets kind of intermingled because we're talking about what's a more favorable result. So setting aside whether Brando will be able to prove if he gets beyond this stage, the summary judgment stage, any damages at all, he has put in evidence that a more favorable result to the company is that he not owe $1.3 million to a bank, presumably, for the debt from the improvements, that he thought at least 82% of it was going to get paid for, according to his allegations, and that he had some other tenants in the offing. And so maybe he didn't have to put in any of that money or most of that money and rent it to another tenant. So why is that? That's evidence that's in there. You've just acknowledged that, well, he's whole because his building is worth the same amount. There's no evidence that your client put in to dispute Brando's testimony on that, or evidence from some real estate expert saying, geez, downtown Excelsior is a dead zone. He was lucky to get this deal as the lease was finally drafted. But that's not in there. So what? I'm sorry for taking up so much of your time, so I'm going to stop. But tell me, why is the evidence I've just talked about, Brando's testimony, not enough to create a genuine issue of material fact that this may be a more favorable result to the company, to Brando?
All right. If you'll indulge me for just a moment. That's why I wanted to start with my discussion of how we got here. Okay? The district court, when we made our motion to the district court, we said the better deal claim fails, better deal scenario claim fails because there's no evidence of but-for causation. We said in our brief to the district court and in our brief to this court, by the way, that the no deal scenario claim fails for an entirely different reason. It doesn't fail for lack of but-for causation. It fails for lack of evidence of damages. The district court, when it issued its ruling, it ruled only on the better deal scenario claim. It ruled, I agree, the better deal scenario claim fails, therefore I don't need to reach this other claim. I think the one issue that Mr. Johnson and I both agree on is that the district court got that wrong. The district court should have addressed that no deal scenario claim, okay? Now, to your question, that also gets back to my timing. You asked me about, well, why didn't we present a real estate appraiser? Why didn't the defendant go out and find it? That's my whole point, is that by the time this no-deal scenario claim was raised, all the deadlines had passed. This was literally at the 11th hour.
Motion? I assume he had to make a motion to amend the complaint if it was so late in the day. Did you make a motion to ask for an extension of the discovery deadline?
We did not. We did not. But again, who bears the burden of proof? The burden of proof in any case is the plaintiff. You got to prove duty, you got to prove breach of duty, you got to prove causation, and you got to prove damages. If this court is of the view that simply demonstrating that he spent money to improve his property constitutes evidence of damages, or at least evidence to get past the summary judgment motion, then you should reverse. If, on the other hand, you're of the mind, it sounded like what Judge Sleater was asking, was doesn't all that come into the doesn't all that come into damages? When you're talking about whether somebody spent money on their property, whether that fact and that alone proves damages, is it that simple? And I'd say no, it's not.
Mr. Angel, with that, part of why I asked the procedural question, it seems like you're agreeing, and perhaps the parties mutually weren't prepared for the damages issue related to the no deal, but for analysis. Is that in a summary?
Well, I think I'm prepared to address it. I wish I could tell you. I found a court case that says that it's just like this one, and I'd like to show it to you, and here's what it says, and it says that we win. I wish I could. Okay, but I looked, and I'm a very thorough legal researcher. At least I consider myself a very thorough legal researcher, and I looked all over the place for cases involving a plaintiff seeking to recover as damages improvements that the plaintiff made to its own property. I found none. I found none in Minnesota. I found none in any other state. And by the way, I looked not only at appellate records, I also looked for any trial court decisions. I could not find a single decision anywhere addressing this issue.
But do we need a decision so much as the civil procedure? And the point being is that if it was premature for the court, doesn't that lead us to the point Judge Siegel's making that a genuine issue of material fact and we remand for further proceedings? And then your experts will come forth and then that issue will be resolved at
that
time.
But the court didn't make any ruling on that issue. That's the whole point. I mean, I think that's the one thing that Mr. Johnson and I both agree on, is that that issue was presented to the court as a question of law for the court to resolve, and the court didn't resolve it one way or the other. Now, I understand you can say, well, we're going to kick it back to Judge Moore. He didn't make a decision on this issue, and we're going to send it back down to him, and he can take the first kick at the can. I understand you have the right to do that. I would suggest that that's inefficient, because I can pretty much assure you that if you send it back and Judge Moore grants the motion on the no-deal scenario claim, I'm fairly confident we'll be right back up here again, because Mr. Johnson will appeal that. And I got to tell you, I think if Mr. Johnson denies our motion, I know we don't generally have a right to interlocutory relief, which is what we were just talking about a few minutes ago, but I'll tell you, I'd dig and try to find a way to get that issue back before the court. Like I said, the view from our end is fairly simple, is that the plaintiff bears the burden of proving all four elements of their claim. They got to come forward with evidence of that in response to a summary judgment motion. And he didn't do that. The only evidence, other than the cost of improvements, as Judge Segal noted, is in the record, is some income, some property tax records that Brando submitted. But property tax records aren't admissible. And I've cited a Supreme Court case in our brief that stands for this proposition. Taxation records aren't admissible for any purpose other than the taxable value of the property. And we pointed that out in our reply brief to Judge Moore. We pointed it out in our brief to this court. And Mr. Johnson hasn't raised it again. I take it because he agrees with that. But there wasn't any. Other than the cost of the improvements itself, and that's a fair point, other than that, there was absolutely no evidence that Brando is in a worse position. I mean, and that ultimately, that's the question, right? It's not whether he spent money to improve the property. The ultimate question is whether Brando is in a less favorable position as a result of the malpractice than he would have been absent the malpractice. And respectfully, I suggest that Brando failed to present evidence in that regard. And for that reason, had the district court reached that issue, the district court should have granted our motion. I guess that's as simple as I can put it. I don't know if I have a little bit of time left. The nice thing about being the appellant is you always get the last word, just like a movement on a motion. But and I'm not going to address all of the arguments that Mr. Johnson made, but I do think there's a couple that I should address, and one of them is this whole idea of expectation interest. This is a malpractice claim. It's not a breach of contract claim. I think the court actually noted that that's kind of mixing apples and oranges, seeking the expectation interest damages on the no-deal scenario claim. So why don't I skip over that and go to the windfall issue? There's a part
of 15 seconds, counsel.
There's a part of Mr. Johnson's brief that addresses a law review article that talks about windfalls. I will just say this: it doesn't support it. I printed it out. I read it. Got some highlights in there about what it says. It doesn't support the point that Mr. Johnson is suggesting that it does, that the infall, that the windfall to Brando in this case constitutes an earned windfall as opposed to a wrongful windfall. And if the court is interested in finding out why I say that this article doesn't prove that point, the court is certainly free to review it. Thank you for indulging me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you, counsel. And Mr. Johnson, you do have 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would join in their request to go ahead and review that article on the windfall. I guess I think that would be totally appropriate. We think it backs up our assertions in this case. I think Judge Siegel has summarized the evidence that Brandel has presented. I think Brandel has presented evidence proving all four elements of legal malpractice in this case. They're basically trying to assert that the no-deal scenario fails for lack of evidence of damages. It doesn't. There are damages. The damages are the landlord improvement payments made by Brandel. That's exactly what the claim was made in this case. They're attacking, they're saying this is a malpractice case, not a contract case.
So did you put in any evidence, though, that, I mean, your client is collecting rent, and the tenant put in all the tenant improvements, I'm assuming, at least nothing in the record says that they didn't. So is the no deal, in fact, I mean, why did you present enough evidence to create a genuine issue of material fact? I mean, aren't there a whole lot of unknowns here that maybe your client is, in fact, better off with this lease as finally drafted and signed because he's collecting rent and the tenant put in all these improvements? What are we to go on here?
He's not better off, Your Honor, because he made all of these improvements and was expecting an 82% reimbursement from the tenant. It was his intent. It was his expectation that that's what Ms. Melander would do, and that simply was not done in this case. So he had a contractual expectation of this getting done. That is a proper measure of damages. The lease is a contract. And if the contract was theoretically breached, which doesn't occur here, but it really goes to Brandau's expectation in what was to happen, the damages are there. It's all the payments that he made for those landlord improvements. The windfall argument will back him up that they shouldn't be reduced or offset. The collateral source statute doesn't apply. There's no law or regulation saying these landlord improvements should be reduced. They are an earned windfall. They are an earned windfall. He was entitled to that. So basically, it's our position that the no-deal scenario exists and that the but-for damages would be all of the landlord improvements that were made in the case. And unless the court has more questions, that's all I have. So thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel. We appreciate your answers to our questions today. And again, it was nice to see you here live. We'll take the matter under advisement and issue a ruling within 90 days. We will be adjourning now. This was the final of three oral arguments, so we now have non-oral matters to consider as well. Everyone have a good day.
Thank you. Is this the first day that the court has had?
No, we've started in January, actually the first week of January, so we're progressively increasing our oral arguments, so there'll be more.
Well, it's an honor to appear in front of the court. It hasn't happened.